Well, friends, we come to the grand finale of Companies Act, starting with audit and auditors. You are aware that the money of an investor is placed in the hands of the director, who is managing the company judiciously on behalf of an investor. But how do you check whether the director is not misappropriating or misapplying your funds? For this purpose, an auditor, a qualified chartered accountant who is a member of the Institutes of Chartered Accountants of India, is a person who verifies the profits and losses of the company and to give you a true picture of the financial position of the company and its future prospects. And therefore, the Companies Act today has brought about auditing standards as regards auditors, whereby we have seen with the various scams as regards Enron, Satyam and other areas where these professionals have important portfolios towards the company. Let us now move on into the area of auditors. Coming down to appointment of auditors. Before I go to the subsequent appointment, my first auditor of a company is appointed within 60 days of the incorporation of a company. If within 60 days he is not appointed, he is required to inform the shareholders that an auditor is not appointed, so that the shareholders within a period of 90 days will call an EGM. What is an EGM? An extraordinary general meeting. At this extraordinary general meeting, my first auditor is appointed. Thereafter, now we go to important provisions as regards subsequent appointments. At every company's first AGM, any individual or firm, as I told you today, we have partnership firms wherein partners are chartered accountants who are eligible to be auditors, or firms which are called as LLPs, limited liability partnerships, which are eligible to be auditing the financial state of affairs of the company. And therefore, every company shall appoint an individual or a firm as an auditor, and this gentleman holds office till the conclusion of the 6th annual general meeting. The appointment is ratified, set right, to correct, approved by the members in every AGM. Every such auditor who is appointed is required to send a notice of such an appointment to the registrar within a period of 15 days. That is, the company secretary is required to inform the registrar that the auditor has been duly appointed. Now, as far as any appointment or reappointment is concerned, it shall be not more than 2 terms, that is 10 years continuously. The first auditor shall be appointed by the board of directors within 30 days from the date of registration of the company. Coming down to appointment of auditors in a government company. The Comptroller and Auditor General of India, in respect of every financial year, shall appoint the qualified auditor within 180 days of the commencement of the financial year. He shall hold office till the conclusion of the annual general meeting. The first auditors of a government company shall be appointed within 60 days from the date of the registration of the company. If supposing my first auditors are not appointed, my board of directors within a period of 30 days are required to appoint the auditors with immediate effect. Coming down to filling of casual vacancy. It is normally filled by the board of directors within 30 days. If, however, by resignation, then and approval by the companies in its general meeting within a period of 3 months on the recommendation of the board, the auditor is sought to be appointed. Coming down to reappointment of a retiring auditor. Reappointment of a retiring auditor. Now, such a retiring auditor is eligible to be reappointed, but then he cannot be reappointed in the following circumstances. If he has given a notice in writing of his unwillingness to be reappointed, there's a special resolution which has not been passed at that meeting, appointing some other auditor, or providing expressly that he shall not be reappointed. In such an eventuality, such a retiring auditor is not normally reappointed. Now, coming down to removal and resignation, a very, very important area. Can an auditor be removed? Yes, he can be removed even before the expiry of the term. However, this has to be done by way of an SR or a special resolution. In case of a resignation, the director himself resigns. If it is the question of a government company, the resignation has to take effect with the consent of the Comptroller General, whereby the auditor has to state the reasons for his resignation. Now, coming down to the removal of an existing auditor. A special notice is required to be circulated, and the retiring auditor, whereby, is also required, or the person who is removed is required to be given an opportunity of hearing. He gives a letter of representation to the shareholders, and this representation, the copy is required to be annexed at every general meeting. If for any reason the National Company Law Tribunal, on the basis of the application of an aggrieved member or on the application of the central government, feels there is some kind of a fraudulent transaction entered by an auditor with any of the directors, whereby any act of deceit takes place, can the auditor be removed? The answer is yes, whereby the National Company Law Tribunal has the power sua moto, that is on its own, to remove the director with immediate effect. Coming down to the eligibility and qualifications of auditors. Well, friends, you're aware he is a person who is a chartered accountant who is qualified under the Chartered Accountants Act of 1949, holding a COP, that is Certificate of Practice. In case it's a firm whereby majority of partners are practicing in India, they are qualified for appointment as chartered accountants so that they may be appointed by its firm name to be the auditors of the company, and they are required to be signing any financial transaction on behalf of the company. Now, coming down to disqualifications of auditors. A body corporate other than a registered limited liability partnership, that is LLP, cannot be appointed. If he is an officer or employee of the company, he cannot be appointed. A person in the capacity of a partner or who is in the employment of an officer or employee of the company cannot be appointed. A person who or his relative or partner is holding any kind of a security or interest in the company, whether it's a subsidiary company or a holding company or any kind of associate company, is totally disqualified. The value could be anything around 1,000 rupees, whereby the face value of the share cannot exceed the same. If he is indebted to the company thereby, or he has taken any loans from the company, he is sought to be disqualified. He has given a guarantee or provided any kind of security, is totally disqualified. any person or a firm who has business relations with the company. A person whose relative is a director or is in the employment of the company cannot be an auditor. A person who is in full-time employment elsewhere and he holds auditorship in more than 20 other companies, he is sought to be disqualified. A person who is convicted by a court for any offence involving fraud and a period of 10 years has not elapsed from the date of his conviction is totally disqualified. We shall now come down to the powers and duties of auditors. Right to access. Well, friends, what is the meaning of access? An auditor, being an important financial professional, must have the account books, the vouchers, receipts to be provided by the company and its directors to the auditors so as to enable him to have the accounts audited. So, accessibility means ready availability of all the books. Now, supposing the books are not supplied by the directors or the information that he requires is not given by the directors, he has to immediately mention about this fact unto the company in the shareholders' meeting so that the relevant information that was required was not obtained or given to him. When it comes to subsidiaries, he has every power to have a thorough insight as far as subsidiary companies are concerned because an auditor will have a consolidated balance sheet of both the holding company as well as the subsidiary company under it. And therefore, these areas are required to be looked into. He has every right to receive 21 days before the meeting is held a notice so that he is in a position to prepare the auditor's report at the AGMs. Now, power of inquiry. This is a very, very important portfolio, my dear friends, whereby the auditor has five important powers which we shall look into. The auditor may inquire into whether the loans and advances made by the company on the basis of security that is given by the company has been properly secured or not. Whether transactions represented are merely by book entries and whether they are prejudicial or going adverse to the interest of the company is what the auditor is required to find out. Whether securities are sold at a price lesser than the purchase price, because if their shares are given at a discount, which is not permitted, this has been to be looked into by the auditor of a company. Whether loans and advances made by the company are shown as deposits. Whether personal expenses, now the director may incur many personal expenses and charge it in the company as a revenue account and go scot-free. This is where the auditor whereby is required to look into, and we have seen where Pricewaterhouse made one of the same mistakes in the Satyam scam whereby the directors had manipulated the funds and the auditor did not apply discretion at this level. Whether cash received, if any, against the shares allotted for cash, whether this cash is actually received and whether it's shown in the balance sheet, the auditor is required to be probing into. Now, coming down towards duties of directors. His first duty is to have a complete insight or knowledge of the Articles of Association, the Company Act provisions and the regulations as regards auditing standards which are required to be complied. Again, as far as prospectus is concerned, the auditor is required to give for 5 financial years before the issue of the prospectus, the profit and losses, as well as the financial position of the company, which is an accountability at his end. The auditor has very important reports that are required to be given. He is required to see whether branch offices Now, when the company has got a registered office, in branch offices, there may be certain internal auditors. Have these internal auditors given a clear picture of the financial position? Whether auditing standards have been complied, this is what we are seeing here. If financial internal controls have been maintained by the company, is required to be reported. And if there is any fraud undertaken, it shall be immediately reported within a period of 60 days. The internal audit shall be conducted by obviously a chartered accountant or a cost accountant, wherein he is a professional as decided by the board of directors. The manner and interval shall be prescribed by the central government. The following classes of companies are required to be appointing internal auditors. Namely, every listed company, as far as unlisted companies are concerned, having share capital of rupees 50 crore or more, the turnover is 200 or more, and wherein the outstanding deposits are 25 crores or more than 25, internal auditors are required to be appointed, which is a mandatory provision. Every private company having a turnover of over 200 crore, outstanding loans of rupees 100 crore or more are required to be having internal auditors. Now, there are certain services which shall not be undertaken by any auditor. As a matter of professional conduct and ethics, the auditor cannot undertake any accounting and bookkeeping services, any kind of audits within the company, because that is taken care of by an internal auditor, whereas this person is a third-party external auditor of the company. Design and implement any kind of financial information systems. Actuarial, any kind of insurance service areas on its accounting aspects cannot be undertaken. Any investment or advisory services, investment banking services, or any kind of outsourcing of financial services and management services are strictly taboo, which cannot be undertaken by the professional auditors, who can be an individual or partners in the case of an LLP. Well, friends, thank you very much. We have had an insight into the areas of auditors, the professional areas, as regards their appointment, qualifications, disqualifications, and important portfolios as regards the powers and duties of directors. I will now summarize the entire area that we have covered. We started off with Indian Contract Act 1872. Where we went into the basics of agreements and contracts, the topics on consideration, lawful object, the breach of contract, the discharge of contracts. We then went on to the area of Sale of Goods Act 1930, which covered important transactions between the buyer and the seller on the subject matter with regard to goods. As regards who is a man who is an unpaid seller, where dues which are due from him is not paid. We then went into our third area on the Consumer Protection Act of 1986, which gave us an insight into who is a consumer, what are unfair trade practices, redressal commissions, namely the district commission, the state commission, the National Commission. We then went into Competition Commission of India under the Competition Act, which gave us an insight on the various areas of dominating position and anti-competition agreements. We later went into intellectual property rights, which is a subject matter of creativity of the individual mind, with three specific areas on patent, which is a new invention, a copyright, which is confined to literary artistic works, and trademarks, which is a mark distinguishing or indicating the quality of one manufacturer from those of his competitors. And finally, we wound up with Companies Act, looking into the various implications on the nature of companies, the memorandum of association, the prospectus, the share capital of the company, and we have concluded with auditors and directors of the company. Well, friends, I hope it has been a very pleasant journey with me, and I wish you good luck for your ensuing exams and for all future academic endeavors. Thank you very much.